Hello, welcome to Workplace Wake Up. I'm Jen Shaw. Every week, I spend about 15 minutes covering key legal developments, introducing you to interesting guests, and providing some entertainment to start your workday. I hope you enjoy this week's episode. We have had so many important developments over the last couple of months. Today, we're going to talk about a federal law called the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. Now, here's what's funny about this, you guys. Most of the time, I don't talk to you about federal law because I tell you, California is more strict. Most states are more strict unless they just follow federal law, right? So when I tell you we're just not going to worry too much about federal law, it's not that it doesn't matter. It's just that California law usually imposes more requirements. Well, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act does not fall into that category, and it is incredibly interesting for a couple of reasons. Okay, so first of all, what is this law? What is the PWFA, as people call it, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act? This is a federal law that requires a covered employer to provide what we call a reasonable accommodation to a qualified employee's or applicant's known limitations, okay? Remember, this is written by lawyers, so it's long, related to, affected by, or arising out of, are you ready? Pregnancy, childbirth, or related medical conditions, unless the accommodation will cause the employer a, quote, undue hardship. Okay, in English, what does this mean? If you have 15 or more employees anywhere in the universe, you're going to have to consider reasonable accommodation requests from applicants and employees that relate to anything broadly connected to pregnancy, childbirth, or related conditions, in generally the same way that you are going to handle requests for reasonable accommodation otherwise for medical conditions and also for religious beliefs and practices. Now, the reason we're talking about this law today is that the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission finally released their regulations interpreting this law. And remember what happens with federal regulations. Congress passes a law. They're not going to get all the details in the law. Those are going to come in the regulations. And that's what's happened here. So the regulations were issued just a couple of weeks ago. And they are 408 pages long. There are a lot of regulations here. You don't need to go read all 408 pages. We are actually going to be having a webinar that will deal with all of the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act issues and the interaction with California law on June 4th, 2024. You can go look at our training page on our website and you can sign up for it. It's an hour and a half long and we'll cover all of this stuff. But what I want you to remember today, okay, because you have to comply now, is that this is a very broad law. And what I mean by that is interesting. So, without getting political, you all know that the United States Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, and the issue of abortions is pretty much being left to each state. Now, you may or may not agree with that decision. We're not going to talk about it today. But the reason it's important is it definitely shows that the federal bench, right? The U.S. Supreme Court thinks that this should be a state law issue. The irony is the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act actually protects not just pregnancy or childbirth, but infertility and fertility treatment, the use of contraception, the termination of a pregnancy, including via miscarriage, stillbirth, or abortion. It is a very, very broad protection. Morning sickness, lactation issues, even menstruation, okay? So we already have this significant tension between what the Supreme Court did in the case overruling Roe versus Wade and what Congress is doing in this law. Now, there were thousands of comments to the proposed regulation under the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. About 95% of those comments were about the protection for abortion. This is a very hot third rail button or issue for many, many people. But what I want you to know as an employer is not only that it's broad protection, but that unlike the Americans with Disabilities Act, which defines a qualified individual relatively narrowly, so not as many people as you might expect are covered by the ADA, we have a really sweeping definition under the regulations for the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. And it's going to cause some confusion in your organization because it is much broader than the Americans with Disabilities Act or California's Fair Employment and Housing Act. And that is because it includes temporary and in the future, meaning if an employee is temporarily qualified or maybe qualified in the near future, they are going to be covered by this law. Now, remember, the applicant or employee is qualified if they can perform the essential functions of the job in question with or without reasonable accommodation. Now, they're also qualified if their inability to do so is temporary and the essential functions can be performed, quote, in the near future. Now, the regulations define temporary as a limited period of time, not permanent. And 40 weeks is considered to be in the near future, almost a year. By the way, do the math. 12 weeks are left. That's because of the FMLA. So remember, we're talking about a year is 52 weeks. This is going to be covering for 40 weeks. We've got 12 weeks of FMLA. Now, the limitations do not have to be very limiting for the applicant or the employee for them to be covered by the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. So we are talking about known limitations, something that the employer is aware of, all right? But known means only that the worker or the representative have communicated to the employer about the limitation. There's no magic word. There's no required format. And this is going to sound similar. This is the advice we give in our LOA workshops, right, about not requiring a certain form, not requiring a certain document, but it's the information that you need. And remember that the notification can be verbal or in writing. It does not have to be written on a form that's goldenrod in color with four, you know, copies available, right? Now, limitation is something that is going to apply potentially even for folks who have a healthy and normal pregnancy, because the way limitation is defined, it can be a problem or an impediment that is modest or minor or only happens on an intermittent or infrequent basis. It also can include things that the applicant or employee may need to take to maintain their health. So steps they may need to take or time off they may need or a class they need to go to. Now, remember that the accommodations under the ADA and the California Fair Employment and Housing Act would be very similar in the regulations for the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. They talk about things like job restructuring, frequent breaks, light duty. They don't provide an exhaustive list because they wouldn't. Any other accommodations that the applicant or employee considers to be, quote, reasonable, close quote, will be something that you should look at, that you should at least consider. Now, what about documentation? Because when you have a law that is written this broadly, you want documentation. You want to have some way of knowing whether somebody is pulling your leg. So the way the regulations are written on the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act is that if you have reasonable concerns about whether a physical or mental condition or limitation is, quote, related to all those categories, right? Related to, affected by, or arising out of pregnancy, childbirth, or related conditions, you can request additional information from the applicant or the employee. You have to use what the EEOC calls best practices for the interactive process. Now, obviously, you've heard that term best practices when we talk about the ADA interactive process and the Fair Employment and Housing Act here in California. They both require the interactive process. By the way, because this is a federal law, remember, just like the ADA is, right?
all of you should be familiar with this interactive process requirement, even if you don't do business in California. So you're allowed to request documentation, but you have to do so reasonably, and you cannot seek more information than you need to make a determination about whether the person is covered. All right. Now, the other thing that the regulations do is they clarify when you can deny this accommodation request, and it's only when there's an undue hardship. Now, the factors that the regulations look at are going to sound familiar to you. The length of time the employee or the applicant will be unable to perform the essential functions, the nature of the essential function, including its frequency and the importance to the organization, whether there is work that the applicant or the employee has to do, whether you have provided other applicants or employees with who work in similar positions, with temporary suspension of those functions, so you took away some functions, whether there are other employees who can perform the functions in the employee's absence, and whether the essential function can be postponed, if so, for how long. These are new. These are different factors, many of them, than what we are used to considering under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Now, this regulation, this what's called the final rule, they always publish the final rules in the Federal Register. It's going to be published on April 19th, and it's going to take effect on June 18th, 60 days later. Now, because there have been so many comments provided about the regulations, we anticipate that there likely will be a challenge to the final rule. And if that's the case, this deadline of June 18th could be pushed out. But I want you to know about that. Now, what is critical for you to understand is that it's not that you don't have to comply with the pregnancy disability law here in California, or if you're in Oregon or Hawaii or New York or New Jersey, many, many other states have pregnancy type leave laws. It's not that you can ignore those, right? Because some provisions of those laws are going to be more strict than the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. But you can see that certainly with respect to the definition of limitation, where now we can look at the temporary nature of the limitation, and also that the employee may be able to perform the functions in the near future, which is defined as 40 weeks. If you're an employer in this situation, 40 weeks hardly feels like in the near future, but okay, that's fine. What you've got to make sure you're doing now is put the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act in the rubric of other leave laws you are considering when you're evaluating somebody's request. And I shouldn't just say leave laws, accommodation laws, right? So FMLA, CFRA, ADA, Fair Employment and Housing Act, et cetera. And one of the things that comes up sometimes is some of these rules don't apply to labor organizations. This one does. It's very broad. So there's a lot going on here. Now, remember that we also had the PUMP Act, which was passed. It's called the Providing Urgent Maternal Protections for Nursing Mothers Act, that is actually enforced by the Department of Labor. That's already on the books. And that definitely broadened the protections, the federal protections for employees who express their milk at work. So we are seeing a huge broadening of the entitlements and the protections to women because of their pregnant status, their childbirth status, or as we're learning with the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, even someone who voluntarily chooses to end a pregnancy. So there is a lot here. Be sure you join us for the webinar. Again, it's coming up on June 4th. It will be our traditional style, an hour and a half long. You'll have plenty of time to ask questions. In the meantime, take a look at those policies, folks. Look at what your pregnancy policies say. Make sure they don't run afoul of anything that's in this new rule, this new final rule under the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. Also, make sure that your processes are in place. You know what notices you're supposed to be giving. I know it's a lot, but as I always say, we can do hard things. Don't be intimidated by it, but someone in the organization does need to own this process. I want to make sure you all take the time you need to get your ducks in order and make sure that you're really on top of what this law requires. We also blogged about this final rule a couple weeks back. I think it was posted on April 22nd. So you can go back and look at our blog post on it as well. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Go out and have a beautiful day. Life is short. The world's a little crazy right now, but we're all going to be okay. Just enjoy every minute. I'll see you here next time. Thanks, everyone.
Workplace Wake Up, including our guests and hosts, do not provide legal advice in this podcast. Do not act upon any of the information discussed in this podcast without first consulting a licensed attorney in your jurisdiction. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to spread the word, please share it with others, post about it on social media, and/or rate and review it. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook, and email us at info@shawlawgroup.com.